This Tuesday, Distinguished Concerts International New York presents the New York premiere of Paradise Lost, Shadows and Wings at Carnegie Hall. This is a concert version of this opera composed and conducted by Eric Whitaker, who joins me now. Pleasure to meet you.
A pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Tell me the connection between this opera and the epic poem by John Milton of the same name.
So the connection is scant at best. The idea was, I'm heavily inspired by Japanese graphic novels, anime and manga. And so the idea was that we would take the Milton poem, Paradise Lost, and then treat it as if it were the first in this grand series of Japanese manga books. So ours is a story that is, say, a spinoff from Milton's, that on the night of this great battle for paradise, the children of those warriors were sent to the most remote corner of paradise, told to wait, and their parents have yet to return.
It's hard to talk about music sometimes, but if you can, give me an idea of what people will hear on Tuesday at Carnegie, because you work both in traditional orchestral music and voices and electronica. What's the mix for this?
So this is something completely different than, I think, what I normally do. And I should say it's not really an opera. It's sort of more now music theater. It's got elements of musicals, operetta-ish. It's got cinematic elements, even musically. There's taiko drummers. There's a DJ.
Do you have another name for it then?
I don't.
Does oratorio fit, or you just don't want to be categorized?
Well, it's funny. So it's not really an oratorio because there's also dramatic scenes in between, acted scenes, and ultimately the whole thing should be staged. And what's so great about DCINY presenting this is that they're giving us a chance to just put it up in New York as a concert version. But we'll do a full read-through of the show so that you'll be able to hear all the scenes and the dialogue, acted and sung.
It's a big show.
It's a pretty big show.
Let's just call it a big show. Your music is very popular right now among choral groups. People like singing your stuff. Why is that?
I don't know. I'm almost afraid to wonder. I'm humbled and honored by the response it seems to be getting. I'd like to think that it's because I try to be sensitive to the texts, and I think that I choose very, very good poems to set, and that I think when I'm most successful as a composer, I get out of the way of the words and sort of just listen to the magic that the poet already hid underneath those words and sort of sound that out into the air. I feel sometimes strange taking credit for it because I feel like the poet has done most of the heavy lifting.
There's a huge boon right now in choral singing, choir singing, and maybe due to the television show Glee, show choir singing. This must be gratifying to you.
Yeah, it's thrilling. I love that people are starting to sing again and that it's in some ways become cool. American Idol, I think, has also helped.
Yes, I believe so. Right? I think you're right.
Just seeing people who can actually sing. You know, we forget even in rock music that back the 60s, 70s, even the 80s, those were people singing. And nowadays, especially with pop music, it's hyper-produced. And it's cool, but you can't always really appreciate the vocal performance. I'm not sure you'd call it a vocal performance anymore. It's more a production performance. So I think people still thrill to the sound of actual human beings singing.
You're an American. Where were you born?
I was born in Reno, Nevada.
And did you grow up there too?
Yeah, I grew up near there in a little farming town called Gardnerville. I actually lived all over the state because my dad worked for the state of Nevada, but always in very small towns, usually population 3,000, 4,000, 5,000.
Musical background in your family?
Nothing. And I grew up, I didn't really read music. I played in a pop band when I was in high school. I got my first synthesizer when I was 14. And I wanted to be in Depeche Mode or Duran Duran back in the 80s. And that's what I thought I was going to do. And then when I went to school in Las Vegas, which was the big state school, I got tricked into singing in the choir, and it changed my life.
How did it change your life?
Well, the first piece that we sang was the Requiem by Mozart, the very first day of choir. And like I said, I didn't read music, and I'd certainly never really heard classical music. I didn't know a fugue. We began with the fugue, the Kyrie. I didn't even know what a Kyrie was. I was sort of raised without religion that way. And hearing counterpoint in three dimensions around me and the power of the human voice and I remember just being in tears that entire rehearsal. It was as if I'd been seen in black and white my entire life, and now suddenly it was just this brilliant technicolor. And I became the world's biggest choir geek, which I think I am to this day.
I'm Elliot Forrest talking to Eric Whitaker. His big show, Paradise Lost, Shadows and Wings, will have its New York premiere at Carnegie Hall this coming Tuesday. After the college experience, you went on to study with John Corleano. What did you learn from him?
Well, John was easily the best teacher that I ever had. One of the things that I loved with John was that in traditional composition lessons, you work on something all week long, you bring it in, and then the teacher sort of tears it apart for you, shows you what you've been working on wrong. John would never work with me on a piece that I was working on then. We would only talk in the abstract. How is it that you create something from scratch? And mostly we would talk about architecture and musical architecture and structure and form. And a lot of my lessons were he would have me make these paintings, these beautiful paintings before I wrote a note of music, sort of depicting the way I wanted the piece to grow. And then I have to take that painting and then divide it, say, into 10 little spots and then make these larger paintings based on each one of those 10. And you end up making all of these structural decisions before you ever have the pressure of writing a note of music. And it was a great technique to take with me, and also just a beautiful way of looking at music. Sometimes I find, especially classical concert music, as a composer, you can really begin micromanaging. And it's so nice to always be thinking on the macro level.
There was a time when those people who wrote for the film were almost not even allowed or accepted to a certain degree to be heard in the concert hall, and even back and forth in the other direction as well. John Corleano is one of those people that straddles both. I sense that you see no boundaries as well. Are those boundaries breaking down a little bit more?
I think they definitely are. I think there's still a hardcore audience that wants their classical music spiky and unpopular, and that's just the way it's got to be. I give them all the respect in the world, and good luck to them. I feel
you don't put yourself in that category, though.
I don't at all. I even as I'm composing, I'm imagining the audience being affected. Like, I try to imagine at this moment, where am I taking these people on this emotional journey, so that it's never in a vacuum for me.
I wouldn't call it spiky and unpopular. I actually like the way you describe it. The way I've been thinking about it the last few years is a lot of contemporary composers are avoiding melody, and you don't.
Yeah, thank you. That's a huge compliment for me. I think somewhere along the way, classical music became incredibly academic. And somehow within there, I think some cynicism crept in. And the idea of a melody or something even remotely popular became second class. And so I remember one time we were sitting around, a bunch of us composition students, and with John Corleano, and somebody said something like, write a Broadway show. They were talking, write like a Gershwin tune. I mean, that's easy. Writing classical music is hard. And John got so upset. And he said, there is nothing more difficult than writing a beautiful melody, and especially a Gershwin melody. And I felt that way too, you know, in my heart. But to hear him say it, my mentor, I felt like it gave me an allowance to embrace that thing. And just that's what I would try to do also.
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that person if I could. See if you can write something that people will sing 100 years from now.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that would be really tough. You have a new CD coming out on Decca in October. What's on that CD?
So it'll be called Light and Gold. Light and Gold is the English translation from Lux Aurumque, which is the title track. Lux Aurumque is this – I made this sort of virtual choir online with hundreds of singers posting their individual parts to YouTube, and I cut them all together and made a choir singing this piece that I wrote 10 years ago, and it went viral. In fact, just this morning it passed 1 million hits. And so that will be the opening track on Light and Gold. And then a number of my other pieces that have gained popularity, Water Night and A Boy and a Girl, and then some new things. Another piece, Nox Aurumque, which is a companion piece, and The Stolen Child with the King Singers. So kind of a mixed bag of my compositions.
Paradise Lost, Shadows and Wings will be at Carnegie Hall this Tuesday. The work is composed and will be conducted
That's right.
by Eric Whitaker. Thanks for coming in.
It's my pleasure, truly.